Blog Talk Radio.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue, possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
Good morning and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Today is Malcolm X's birthday, and I'll be giving away a copy of Malcolm X, The Great Photographs, edited by Thulani Davis. So if you want to get a copy of that, you better follow me at Joy Keys or become a fan on Facebook. Again, look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. But right now I'm going to be speaking with educator David Miller. He's been on the show before talking about his other book he wrote, but today we're talking about bullying. Did you know that there are about 160,000 children who miss school every day because they're afraid they're being bullied? 2.7 million students are bullied each year. One out of every 10 students drop out or change schools because of repeated bullying. And 90% of 4th through 8th graders are being a victim of some kind of bullying. It's a very serious issue, so that's why I wanted to have David on, talk about his book, Khalil's Way. And I believe he's on the line right now. David, good morning. This is Joy Keys.
Good morning, the illustrious Joy Keys.
Oh, wow. Thank you, thank you. I feel honored coming from you, too, like mad educator, mentor, supporter of the youth, so on and so forth. Wow, you're doing so many great things for the youth. I'm pale in comparison to the things that you're doing. But this is a great book, very easy, very straightforward. I mean, it needs to be distributed across the country, in elementary schools, even in high schools, to educators about what kids can do to fight bullying.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for all you do. Very strong interview with Brother Jenks Morton. I was able to catch some of that, another brother out here doing some phenomenal work. And I think what happens, Joy, is we have been misled to believe that folk are not out here doing life-changing work, reconnecting families, working with youth, and really providing some very solid interventions to address many of the challenges that young folks are faced with. And so about 17 months ago, I decided that I wanted to unroll a new chapter in my life, which would be, really looking more critically at the literature that our children were reading, particularly literature that would be empowering, that would be problem-solving, and at the same time would spark curiosity and interest around reading. And so I read a colleague had sent me a story about a young man living in Springfield, Massachusetts. He was 11 years old, and because he was being bullied in school on a regular basis, he decided that he wanted to hang himself. And so oftentimes when you look at this whole issue of bullying, many times, whether it's a movie, whether it's a news story in the Washington Post or the L.A. Times, most of the time when you talk about bullying, you see a white kid being featured or a white family struggling to deal with bullying. And so what I wanted to do was create a children's book. And while the book is for boys and girls, I specifically wrote the book for boys because we know from a literacy standpoint, boys tend to lag behind girls academically, particularly when we talk about things like reading. By the fourth grade, African-American Latino boys tend to be about 2 grades behind academically. And that's not in all cases, but that's, you know,
basically. But why is that? Why is that? Why are they behind academically? Is it because they're not being paid attention to? Is it because boys and girls learn differently? Because, okay, it sounds like you're saying girls are succeeding at reading, but then they say that boys succeed at math better. Who's telling the truth and why, you know?
I think A couple of things. One, boys are definitely being ignored in the class, and not just black boys. I mean, when you look at the national data, there's some serious challenges with boys, of particularly white males, African-American, Latino males, from an academic standpoint. I think one is, you know, the way that most public schools were set up, they were set up to speak to the needs and concerns and academic challenges and academic strengths of girls. And I don't think that we do a lot around, you know, the various kinds of learning strategies. I don't think that we incorporate a lot of the things that we need to incorporate in public schools to capture the attention of boys, to address the energy level of boys. And there's been a great deal of research on brain development in terms of the different kinds of teacher training techniques when you work with boys and you work with girls. And so we know that there are a number of different reasons why boys tend to be behind. When you talk about African-American males, you definitely see challenges in terms of teacher training. A lot of teachers are not trained to educate African-American males. And so, again, I decided to...
That African-American bullying is not highlighted in the media because, well, they're just animals anyway? Is it that attitude that you think that they're not being highlighted, that you're only seeing these white kids committing suicide, white kids, you know, shooting up the school, and you don't see the black kids because, well, black people are animals anyway, and so, like, who gives a crap about them?
I think it's a lot of that. I just think that, you know, black kids continue to be marginalized on every level of society, whether it's K-12, whether it's in higher education. Even if our boys are able to get to college, oftentimes they're ignored in classrooms. I remember even my own story, being in graduate school, I remember sitting down with the dean, and the dean saying to me, you know, here are 25 books that you need to read in order to be prepared for my graduate class. And he said to me, I don't think you're going to read these books. And so it even happens in higher education. And I think one of the things that we have to do, Joy, is I think that we are smart enough, bright enough, and talented enough that we have to begin to create new kinds of literature, new kinds of reading material for children of all ages. 97% of all children's books are written by white women. 97% of children's books in this country are written by white women, even when those books have black or brown, you know, characters in the book. And so I decided that I wanted to write a book for children, but I wanted to spend, initially doing the research piece, I wanted to spend a lot of time with children, middle school age boys and girls, talking with them,
find out what they were thinking,
finding out what they were thinking about. That was step one. Step two was then interviewing their parents. Step three was reaching out to school police, local law enforcement across the country, meeting with and talking to school psychologists and other clinicians.
Let me read some of the book to the audience so they can just get a taste of some of the things you talk about.
Okay.
And let me just tell them a little bit about the character. His name is Khalil, and he lives with his mom. He lives with a single mom. His dad is no longer in the picture at the time of the beginning of the story. They were in the middle of Katrina, and they had to move a lot, so he's going to different schools. But some interesting things, both his parents went to college, very educated. This is just a small quote that he remembers, the little boy remembers when he was talking with his dad one day. His dad told him, never start a fight, but be prepared to protect yourself at all times. He even warned me about kids who, even if you tried to walk away, would follow you looking for a fight. My school had some very strange rules about fighting. For example, if another boy is hitting me and I hit back, we could both get suspended. Or like 2 weeks ago when another new kid named Isaac was getting the fur torn off, basically getting beaten up really bad, man, he didn't even have a chance to swing. Miss Jenkins, our AP assistant principal, broke up the fight and suspended both boys. Go figure. He got knocked out and suspended. That's why I don't think most adults know how tough it is. My dad was a boxer when he was in high school, and the fighters are always told to protect themselves. His stories have helped me understand the importance of being able to protect myself. Plus, he made me promise to tell adults if I'm being bullied. So now, you know, I just read that small excerpt, so some people might jump up and down and say, oh, my God, you know, protect themselves. How are they supposed to protect themselves? Well, if they carry a weapon to school, then they're going to get suspended. If they, you know, do karate, then, you know, and then they're protecting themselves, the school doesn't, you know, see that. They just see two kids fighting and suspend them both. What is the kid supposed to do then?
Well, once again, you know, Joy, again, while the book is written for middle school students, middle school age students, when I do book talks across the country, when I'm working with sororities and fraternities and faith-based groups, I am strongly saying to the parents that you need to read this book in conjunction with your children, because then we need to, create a dialogue around what happens when your son or your daughter is involved in this kind of situation, because the reality it is going to happen, and we need to do a better job of preparing our children for living in a society that is often dangerous and that is often toxic. And so part of what has to come from the parents is this understanding that we don't want you to start a fight, but we want you to protect yourself. And when we say protect yourself, meaning that if you're in the gym, for an example, and there's a scene in the book where Khalil is in
the
gym. The
mm-hmm.
gym is a place where there's a lot of bullying and people getting teased and picked on or whatever the case may be. And there's sort of a set of rules of engagement that Khalil has learned and he has to kind of follow in order to be able to navigate, you know, being in that gym, because a lot of times there's not a lot of adult supervision in the gym. And these are real, real issues that young folks are dealing with. And, you know, it's very sad, Joy, because I've heard from a lot of adults, well, this is just a weaker generation of children, because when I was their age, I got bullied, and I didn't think about committing suicide.
Oh, yeah, I got bullied in school because I was a nerd, you know. I mean, now I don't look like the stereotypical nerd, but I'm still a nerd. But when I was in school, I was a nerd. I had to wear glasses. I was smart. You know, the teachers liked me. I'm light-skinned. What the heck? I was bullied by other black kids, you know, the way
right.
I spoke, because my parents had, you know, read to me. But I was still poor. We were still poor and whatnot. But my parents still were there, and they instilled certain educational standards in me. So then when I would go to, like, you know, after-school programs, you know, I got bullied. And it's funny because when I was older, I saw one of my bullies in the laundromat one day. This was years and years ago, but I saw her in the laundromat, and I was like, whoa. I was like fifth, like, okay, is she still crazy? You know what? This girl was like, oh, my God, hi, how you doing? I'm looking at her like, do you remember me? You used to kind of kill me, you know?
But what I
like about you, what you just said, is that parents need to read the book with the kids. Because my daughter's 18 now, but when she was in first grade, she got choked by a kid.
Wow.
First grade, she got choked by a kid. I had to go up to the school and be like, look, it's either her or the kid. It's not going to be her. What you going to do? And, you know, the response I got was, the response from the school, the principal, oh, you know, kids are just fighting. I said, oh, no. I showed the principal what my daughter showed me. The child put their hands directly around the neck in first grade. So as a parent, it's not going to happen in high school. It's starting early, and they need to be aware of it. So that's why your book, Khalil's Way, is so important, like you said, for parents to read, because I actually was oblivious. I didn't think first grade I'd be dealing with this. What?
Yeah, it's a real serious issue, and what ends up happening in the black community, we don't even call it bullying. You know, the term bullying is a term that's usually used in the white community, but there's high levels of aggression. The difference between children, not all children, but a lot of children now versus the children, you know, when we were growing up, there's a heightened level of violence. A lot of times the violence is accepted, and a lot of times. So, for example, I was just in Durham, North Carolina, doing a book talk in Durham Public Schools with a group mm-hmm. of bullies. I had 40 boys who had already had some contact with the school police for bullying. And when I asked these boys why they needed to bully kids, one of the reasons that most of the kids came up with, two reasons. One, they were bored. They were literally bored. They finished their work. They ain't had nothing else to do. So they start smacking the kid that was sitting in front of them. And the second thing is that they knew that they could bully this kid and get away. They could get away with it. They knew that they could victimize another kid and they could get away with this whole power dynamic.
Right.
Right. And
well,
so
that point about them being bored goes back to schools not being prepared to deal with teaching children in different styles of learning, you know, and that some kids need to be constantly engaged and doing things. They can be very smart, but like you said, they're bored, and they need to have in the school's resources to channel that boredom into something else, you know?
Oh, definitely, and I would submit for most parents cannot even imagine what's happening to their children on a day-to-day basis in school, and what ends up happening, because in our community, we use these terms like no snitching. And so children think that if I tell somebody, I'm going to be labeled as a snitch, and then I'm going to be teased, and people are going to call me a snitch or whatever the case may be. And so it's important that the parents do the work with young people. And then a lot of times we get to come in and do book talks and workshops with young people about really helping them understand that even if you don't have a great relationship with mom or dad, or you don't feel comfortable talking with mom or dad, you got to tell somebody, basketball coach, a mentor, somebody in the church, because a lot of children are skipping school and not performing up to their academic potential.
Well, that's what you talk about that in the book, about them skipping, and I mentioned earlier some of the statistics you quote about them out of school, skipping school, one of the big issues, you know, committing suicide. But, you know, David, you talk about the kids need to talk to their parents or somebody. Unfortunately, you know, the parents are working, like in your story, the mother's working two jobs. And she wants to be involved. It sounds like she's a concerned and caring parent. But when she gets the call, she has to come to school. Like, okay, school, work. How many times can she leave work to deal with this? So, again, I think it goes back to resources and a suggestion that you just made. Is, you know, if you, you know, can't talk to your parent, at least talk to some other adult. So that's a good suggestion, like your coach or the school counselor. But, you know, in the book, even Khalil, he didn't feel like he was being heard.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't feel like he was being heard. You know, and so the people... You know, one of the things that I think in many communities is, you know, like you said, people tell stories about being bullied. And you just got to deal with it. But I think it's a more aggressive type of bullying now. For example, near my house, there was a young lady who was sliced up by 10 girls all at once by a box cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And so girls have this aggressive activity going on as well as boys. And that you're fighting to the death now. They're not like when I was we had fights. You would go after school, you could see the fight, okay, boom, 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 fall out, boom, that's it. Now kids are very, I think, even more angry. Why are kids more angry now, David? What is happening that kids are so angry and don't have empathy? Because empathy stops you from going to that point of I'm going to kill you.
I think it's a couple of different reasons why you see heightened levels of anger among children. One is I go back to this relationship with parents. A lot of times mommy and daddy are not on the same page. And you better bet 8 out of 10 chances that if mommy and daddy are not on the same page, there's gonna be some issues with anger with the child. And again, not saying in every situation where mommy and daddy are not on the same page. And notice I didn't say mommy and daddy together, because we know that for a lot of families, mommy and daddy are not together, but they at least got to be on the same page in terms of discipline, in terms of follow-up for school, in terms of school activities. And we find that because there's such a disconnect at home, that so many children are coming to school angry, and we know that hurt people hurt people. And so even in the book, some of the lead aggressors in Khalil's life are young people who are coming from family situations where mommy and daddy are not on the same page. These are kids who are also not doing well academically. Because if your child is in a class or in a school where a large percentage of the children are not doing well academically, you better believe that there's a lot of bullying, there's a lot of fights, there's a lot of stuff that's going on under the radar screen, particularly when you start talking about the cyberbullying, the text messaging, We just had
yeah,
two
so that's
young
a whole
people.
Other that's a whole other avenue. I mean, he even got texts about, you know, you snitched, man. Now you're you know, they're out for you. There was a girl in the news. I think the people were bullying her through her Facebook page, and then they made up they made up a page as if it was her. I mean, so technology has made, you know, bullying go to a completely other level. But now let's get to some solutions, because we only have a couple minutes left. Some of the solutions you talk about were, first, definitely talking to a parent or another adult to try to get them their attention. The other suggestion is that parents need to be more involved, and that even if mommy and daddy aren't together, they need to be on the same page in terms of supporting that child and letting them know we got your back and that we're going to be there for you. And the schools needing to confront the parents of the bully. And letting them know and putting them on blast to say, you know, hey, your kid is doing this. If he continues, we have no tolerance. He's out. But then, you know, anger is the other side of sadness. So I also want to have some empathy for the bully. And if you are a parent who's a bully or you know a bully, that child is sad. That child is very sad and lost. So what services can we create for that child who is sad and angry and lost?
At the point where mom, dad, grandmom, school official, at the point where we realize that a child is a bully, it has to be addressed immediately. And what ends up happening is the first line of intervention a lot of times from a school perspective is to suspend or expel without dealing with the emotional and psychological needs of this child. And so the first thing that we got to do, we got to identify the situation early. And what ends up happening is parent called me, sent me a Facebook message, child is in the sixth grade, child is now labeled as the school bully. Well, this probably just didn't happen this year. There were probably some early warning signs, first, second, third grade, that need to be addressed.
That's what people don't realize, David. Early, it's starting early. You can't wait till they get to high school. You can't wait till you think, oh, the hormones are jumping. It's starting early, first grade, third grade. It's there.
And I agree, and I think so. One of the interventions that I think that we gotta, and this probably is even a different show to talk about, is a mental health intervention where we need counselors who can come in, who can do individual work, who can do family work. And so that's a body of work that needs to be heightened and explored. But then on the flip side, like I'm in Virginia right now with a group of researchers and academicians, and I'm presenting tomorrow, and I'm saying to them that it can't just be about you writing papers to further your academic career. You got PhDs. You have all of this education and schooling. We need you to help in the community in terms of rolling out interventions and then helping us assess whether or not these interventions are clearly addressing the needs of our children. Because so many of our children, Joy, so many of our children and our parents have mental health challenges that go undressed because we're not talking about mental health services and support. Particularly
I had Terry Williams on. Terry Williams wrote the book Black Pain, and she she talks about that we are not paying attention in the African-American community to the issue of depression and pain, and that people are hiding because they don't want to go to therapists, they don't want to tell, they want to seem strong, you know, and that's, you know, anybody can be sad, and sad for numerous reasons. But there is help. There is so much help, and you need to reach out to it and not be afraid to move past it, so you can get into the light, so to speak. You know, I don't want to get started like I'm a church or nothing. But there are resources in the communities where you can get help. There are people willing to help, and I like that you say to these educators and you know, statisticians, you know, that's great, you're doing this research paper, but we need practitioners in the community. In the community, because that's what's the problem, is that schools don't have the resources. You know, all they can do is suspend. That's all they can do. You know, they have one counselor to 500 kids.
And when you look at the counseling departments, 77% of all school counselors are white females across the country. And so even when you talk about developing interventions for children, particularly black and brown children, we really struggle in that area because many, not saying all of those counselors, not saying all, but many of them don't come to the table understanding the cultural landscape of working in other communities.
Yeah, understanding the context of where these kids are coming from and the things that they have to deal with, you know, it's that's a lack of training in the schools in terms of college and grad school, in terms of cultural competency, but also continued competency. You continually have to learn. You can't just go to school, get your master's degree, get your PhD, and be like, okay, I'm done. Life is a constant learning, and I think that is needed as well, how educators and counselors are being educated and how they continue to educate themselves about the context of where children are and why they're coming to school that way, you know.
Right,
very important. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on. I want to give away some copies of your book, Khalil's Way, so people follow me at Joy Keys and become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Send me an email. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Check out Khalil's Way. Check out the Urban Leadership Institute that David helped find and is the chief visionary officer and co-founder. Their website is urbanyouth.org, doing some wonderful things there. You can bring them to your community, to your church, to your community organizations to speak to adults and children about ways to elevate our children and bring them resources. David, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful Saturday, okay? All right, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with David Miller from the Urban Leadership Institute. Check out his book, Khalil's Way, giving some wonderful tips and tricks on how kids and also educators and parents can deal with bullying, the big issue in the schools. I want to suggest that you also check out Banks Morton, his film, What Black Men Think, coming up on the documentary channel. In a couple days on the documentary channel. You can check out his work, What Black Men Think, his website, and also he's on Twitter at Jenks Morton. So thank you so much for tuning in. We passed 100,000 downloads. Could not have done that without you. I appreciate your support. Follow me because today I'll be giving away a copy of Malcolm X, The Great Photographs, at Joy Keys on Twitter or become a fan on Facebook.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue, possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.